Welcome to the Government Technology Insider Podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Hunsaker. In this episode, we're diving back into the realm of cybersecurity and taking a look at how AI and ML tools are revolutionizing both offensive and defensive strategies. At the heart of a successful defense is the collaboration between human ingenuity and machine capabilities. In this second part of our podcast on the impact of AI and ML on cybersecurity, we delve into the practical applications of AI and ML in cyber defense. In particular, we explore predictive modeling for cyber threat detection and the seamless integration of AI and ML with traditional defense methods. Today, I continue our conversation with Amir Bagapur, PhD Managing Director at Accenture Federal Services, as we delve into the symbiotic relationship between human intelligence and machine learning, paving the way for a more resilient and adaptive cyber defense paradigm. And now I bring you Amir Bagapur. Thank you, Amir, for taking the time to sit down with us again for our second episode. It's a pleasure to speak with you again.
Pleasure to be here.
For our first question, how is human cognition currently complementing the advances in cybersecurity that AI and ML have brought with them?
So artificial intelligence is a mimicking of human cognition in many ways, right? And what AI ML does is it automates and augments the cognition process by making humans faster in their time to discovery. That means data processing and pattern recognition becomes paramount in terms of human interaction with data, to be able to identify massive amounts of data, subtle patterns, anomaly detections that might escape human notice. It's especially valuable when it comes to understanding network traffic or threat detection. These are things that a human alone isn't going to be as effective in detecting and understanding compared to having a system in place that can do pattern detection of large amounts of data. So data processing and pattern recognition is one key component of the hybrid human-machine component. The other element is automation of repetitive tasks. So we can use AI to automate routine tasks like vulnerability scanning, freeing up human security analysts to focus more on strategic issues, to focus more on problem conceptualization. This is what I've been calling kind of like lower ordered repetitive tasks. And then there's the enhanced judgment tasks, right? Where we're not just looking at pattern detection, but we're using data and using natural language processing to analyze incoming threats and to help better conceptualize problems faster. So that means adapting to new threats beyond just algorithms, continuously learning, and then using these tools to enhance the learning process. I think where humans are irreplaceable is the understanding of a context and intent, right? So these AI systems, right, it's a tool, but the AI systems are going to struggle to understand context and intent behind those particular actions. Humans are crucial for interpreting security data, prioritizing threats, making strategic decisions, etc., right? So context, problem conceptualization, humans are necessary in that particular process. And even when we're talking about AI systems where, for example, like ChatGPT, where you're prompting it and asking it a question and it's giving you a response that feels like a very human response, it's not generating that response the way that a human does. It's essentially running a statistical calculation on what the likely probability of the right answer is, looking at the patterns in those particular words. So it's mimicking human behavior, but it's not human behavior, and it's not generating those responses like a human. Creativity and problem solving, right? So humans, they excel in creative problem solving, critical thinking. Analysts have to use their judgment to investigate complex threats. They have to use their judgment to develop and mitigate strategies, improve security posture over time, so on and so forth. This is something that you can't have a fully automated process. And then social skills and communication. So analysts, security professionals, they need to be able to communicate. And at the end of the day, we are operating in complex organizations. And those complex organizations require people to maneuver through them. So social skills and communication is definitely key, and the ability to collaborate with different teams, raise awareness, be able to share information, handle security incidents, that is critical. And I think where technology enables that is the ability to be able to build a community and use these platforms to share data and knowledge more effectively. And so that's not just like an AI, that's not an AI challenge, that is a design challenge and coming up with better workflows and better platforms that can connect people and enable more efficient, more effective sharing of information. One other area is that, look, there's team dynamic as well. So it's not about individuals, it's about teams and how humans interact with each other, right? So AI can empower analysts, but it's going to be a different dynamic when you're talking about a team. So you need human oversight. There needs to be a human in the loop process. Some security systems do have AI for threat detection, but there always needs to be a human in the loop process. The way that we use a lot of these enhanced judgment tools right now is we use it to accelerate the cognition process, but we always have a human in the loop built into the process because we're just not at the point where we can substitute human judgment when it comes to a finished analytical product or finished insight judgment.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about challenges. What are the specific challenges federal agencies are going to face when they start to implement these tools?
Getting these tools into approved secure environments takes a while, right? So the security standards within federal constructs, such as, you know, ATO and FedRAMP processes, those processes are different than the commercial sector. So many of the tools that are available in the commercial sector are not necessarily readily available in the federal sector because of the security posture and just sometimes the culture of getting new technologies in there. So that's one of the challenges. The other challenge is that we have to continue operating on some of these legacy systems. We can't just shut off the legacy system and turn on the, you know, modernized systems, et cetera. So where the magic happens for federal IT professionals and cybersecurity professionals in the federal space is how can we collectively innovate within the legacy environment while setting up a pipeline towards a modernized environment, whether that means like transitioning from prem to cloud, or, you know, if you're in the cloud environment already, how can you use advanced capabilities to further either automate or enhance judgment? That's very specific to the federal environment. And there's definitely like obstacles towards modernization that's unique to the federal environment. But I would also say that innovation within the federal environment is well and alive, and sometimes it requires using methods that are focused more on the development of models that are sometimes using less data, right, to get the same insight. So from a data science standpoint or an analytical standpoint, what if we can get the same answer using half the data versus, you know, a system that uses a lot of data to make the same inference. Analysts in the federal space, data scientists, IT professionals often have to do that. And that's a different type of innovation. But at the end of the day, I think it contributes to the overall improvement of federal systems and the transition from legacy systems to more modern systems.
Now, bringing in industry partners into the conversation, what are the benefits that they bring to the federal agencies as they drive innovation and help replace legacy systems?
We can't build anything with just like the government alone, right? The tools that are getting developed in the commercial sector are a necessary, like a key component of the modernization agenda, right? So having access to industry partners accelerates innovation by not just helping introduce new technologies, but enabling faster adoption of these technologies. Private companies are often at the forefront of technological innovation. So partnering with them allows agencies to leverage these advancements quicker than just doing it in like the federal ecosystem alone. So that means like oftentimes working with partners in the commercial sector that might not be typical like federal partners. And that introduces innovation and enables sometimes quicker solutions than traditional government procurement processes might allow. Partnering with commercial partners also improves our exposure to emerging solutions. So industry partners can introduce federal agencies to new technologies, and they have like AI, cloud computing, cybersecurity solutions that are not readily available or in the federal sector, and that improves efficiency and service delivery. The irony is in this is that a lot of the technologies that are commercialized in the private sector started through government-funded R&D projects with DARPA and, you know, the national labs. And so there's a long history of the government funding the enablement of these technologies at an earlier phase of research where the commercial sector did not have the knowledge or it was just too risky for the commercial sector to take it on. So a lot of these capabilities are developed through federal dollars, but there's a difference between the concept, right, and something that is a go-to-market technology that gets refined and built out to a point where it's ready for scalable use. So the bottom line is that regardless of whether it starts in the government or not, commercial partners are essential in fast adoption of these new technologies in a way that's scalable and cost-effective. And speaking of cost-effective, it's, you know, commercial partners help reduce development costs, and then they can also help gain further access to shared resources. So that means partnerships for shared investments in infrastructure, development, and the reduction of overall financial burden on agencies.
Now, Amir, with the upcoming election, cybersecurity will undoubtedly be a crucial role. So how can federal agencies like CISA effectively coordinate with industry partners to enhance security measures and ensure the resilience of critical systems against cyber threats?
So one, heightened threat awareness. CISA can provide public advisory by proactively sharing information about potential election-related cyber threats with state and local election officials. This isn't just about cyber infrastructure threat, but also the threat of adversarial disinformation in the cognitive space, whether it's on social media or news platforms. But CISA rightfully sees the disinformation threat and the threat to infrastructure with cyber as a different side of the same coin. It's about a threat to not just our infrastructure, but on the collective cognition of, you know, the citizenry, right? That can affect or disrupt an election process through foreign interference. So issuing public advisories is key, but what it is that gets discovered prior to those public advisories is a critical part of CISA's mission. And that means better cyber threat detection and better sharing of information with state and local officials. Collaboration with intelligence agencies. So CISA can work closely with intelligence agencies to gather information about potential foreign interference and share relevant details with election officials, and then strengthening defenses. So that means security assessment resources, improving security postures, enhancing backup and disaster recovery plans, promoting information sharing. So CISA can act as a central hub for information sharing, continuous improvement of post-election analysis, and obviously investing in the cybersecurity workforce. So that means investing in building not just the technologies necessary for detecting and understanding cyber threats, but building a cybersecurity workforce that is representative across all levels of government involved in the election. And then obviously there's physical security and international collaboration, but this is all part of, I think, the broader theme of building the network, communicating from that network, and then building not just the human workforce, but the technologies and tools necessary for understanding, detecting, and encountering these threats.
Now, this is a fun way to end our conversation. So, Mir, how do you envision the future of all of this? Like, what trends and challenges will there be in the field of AI and ML-driven cyber defense?
The future of AI, ML, cyber defense is all about improved threat detection and anticipation, right? So the future of cyber defense using AI, ML is going from descriptive analysis to predictive analysis. It's going from reactive to proactive. And that means an increasing focus on not just the defenses, but more proactive activities such as threat hunting. A lot of the threat hunting will be AI powered. That means AI systems are gonna become more adept at proactively searching for hidden threats within the network. It means automation of lower order tasks and then improvement of AI systems to enhance judgment, enabling us to analyze behavior, hidden threats, and anomalies at a sufficient speed that allows us to be able to respond to automated attacks. And then one last thing that I would have to say is that the cornerstone of these advanced systems will also be how well we could explain why things are happening the way that it's happening, right? So as we make our improvements in these AI systems using different types of automation and different sources of data, we have to have strong systems where we can explain why things are happening the way that they're happening. We're not going to succeed by using AI systems that are going to be black box solutions, where AI is going to spit out some type of analysis or answer, and we can't explain why it's happening the way that it's happening. That's why it's really important to have a human in the loop always, and B, when we're using these AI systems, to be able to practice what's called replicability, right? Meaning, if we generate an insight, can we come up with ways where we can clearly replicate that insight and then have insightful ways that explain why things are happening the way that they're happening?
Thank you, Amir, for joining us today. And a big thank you to our listeners for tuning in. If you're interested in staying up to date on the latest best practices, lessons learned, and proven strategies for leveraging innovative technologies in federal, state, and local government, be sure to visit governmenttechnologyinsider.com. I've been your host, Lucas Hunsker, and until next time, so long.